Hello and welcome to this second audio file regarding non-evidence-based treatment. I hope you had fun with the discussion last week. My name is Dr. Stephen Brewer, and I'm again joined by Dr. Eric Cervantes, Assistant Professor and Chair of the Complementary and Alternative Health Program at Ashford University. And before we get into the non-evidence-based treatments with those cases that Dr. Cervantes presented on last week, I'd like to first talk about evidence-based practices a little bit, and the three general types of evidence-based practices out there. So the first general type of evidence-based practice is the known efficacious or well-established treatment. Those are the ones that we hear about quite often, like cognitive behavioral therapy for anxiety or interpersonal psychotherapy for depression. Those are all well-established treatments. The second area is probably efficacious, and these are treatments that have some peer-reviewed scientific literature that support them, but not enough to where the field will point to the treatment and say, yes, that's the definite go-to treatment for this condition. And then three are the experimental treatments. These are the cutting-edge treatments that don't have almost any peer-reviewed literature, but they're still being explored as treatments. So I guess, Dr. Cervantes, my question is there something in complementary and alternative health or non-evidence-based practice that is similar to these three categories?
Well, I mean, not necessarily similar to per se in these categories, because I think some of these categories would have basically have, you know, what they would have, these logarithms that they follow, you know. Like it's basically from top to bottom, the approach is that way. From my perspective, from a naturopathic perspective, as well as if anything, an alternative perspective, we consider empirical evidence the most important evidence, really. So if something works, we know, we just follow that. We know that that specific thing works. But we also do not limit ourselves and put ourselves in a box and say, like, well, if that works, if we've seen that works, then we should just approach it that way. Mm-hmm. We think of something else, like, well, that works for that person. That's one individual. What if we add that with another thing for the next individual? Because, again, from my perspective, this is individualistic medicine or individualistic approaches to any case. So again, empiricism to adaptation, you know, rather than a believed, you know, that everybody is the same, and then approaching that sameness with the same approach. It's more of let's actually look at the individual and what that individual needs.
So this isn't sort of like a, as you would with a keyboard, a hunt and peck for the letters. You know, this is more of an informed approach that will hopefully help the person, but it was informed by what? It's informed by previous experience, by shared knowledge in the field.
It's from many years of known knowledge in the field. It's passed down from practitioner to practitioner, or from specific disciplines to different disciplines within the alternative health realm. Mm-hmm. You know, so like, let's say, for example, someone comes in with a specific headache. Specific headaches that also have vertigo and ringing in the ears. Some people would just approach it, well, that might be a neurological thing, of course, but let's provide them some medication so that they can actually tone down that. But from our approach, it's like, well, what else is going on structurally? What else is going on mental emotionally? What else is going on perhaps spiritually? But what's interesting, not a lot of conventional doctors, or maybe perhaps even other disciplines from the conventional side, will look at it like maybe structurally we could do something. And maybe, you know, and when you look at structure and maybe perhaps a vertebra is out of place, then boom, you know, you put that vertebra back in place, and all of a sudden you have this flow, you know, again, of the nervous tissue as well as blood flow, etc. So you got to think outside the box rather than just simply thinking, oh, you know, reductionistically, oh, that must be just only nervous system and stuff. So,
right. Yeah. And the great point about thinking outside the box, more and more psychologists are starting to recognize the importance of thinking outside the box, even though for the past 50, 60 years or so, the zeitgeist has been evidence-based practice, and that being the practices that are supported by scientific literature. Mm-hmm. We're recognizing now that there are more and more practices out there that have been passed down through the generations that have, you know, maybe we don't know the why it works, but we know that it works. There are more and more of those out there that we have to embrace and that we have to, you know, at least recognize, especially when we're working with people from different cultures.
Yeah.
I hear more and more psychologists using their own personal definition of evidence-based approaches, that being combining their experiences as a healer, the patient's values and preferences, and the scientific theories that many psychologists use. So it's sort of the middle ground between, I guess, what you're saying and what the field has been demanding for such a long time now.
Yeah, Dr. Brew, if I may add, you know, I think it's really, for me, from my standpoint, it's rather arrogant to state that one knows everything just based on what they're reading as evidence base.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's rather arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
It's more because I have to, like, you know, really pound this belief or this philosophy that and the alternative people believe is that no individual is the same. Everyone has lived in a different environment, so a different, you know, so therefore a different expression of being. So you can't approach one from one perspective every individual. You have to approach an individual with multiple perspectives and different approaches. And again, you know, beating this horse here, you know, thinking outside the box.
Well, it can't be a cookbook.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't just cookbook treatment approach for everybody, even though it may be easier to do that sort of thing on paper. In reality, when we get into the field, that is not the case.
Yeah. Cookbook's rather bland then.
Right. So this leads to another point regarding any practices that are not within the quote-unquote evidence base, being regarded as quackery. This has been the more extreme reaction, I would say, from the evidence-based camp in trying to discredit any practices that are not that don't yet have any scientific support to them. To me, it seems like it's throwing the baby out with the bathwater. You know, there may be some practices out there that are harmful, and that, you know, over time we can show through the peer-reviewed literature, the scientific literature, that they are indeed harmful. But we shouldn't throw out every practice out there just because we haven't gotten around to actually researching them yet. So I know that you have something to say about the quackery aspect of the field.
Sure. That's a really good point. You know, without going into, like, a lot of detail with regards to the history of, you know, basically the territorial fight between conventional doctors and alternative practitioners, the split actually between conventionalists and alternative practitioners took place probably in the years in the 1800s, actually the 19th century. When, you know, what began to happen was René Descartes, actually a little bit before René Descartes began to separate the human being into three components, basically, which was one was a mental-emotional component and the other one was a body component. But interesting enough, what he didn't regard was the spiritual component, which came way before that, because there is sufficient literature out there and historical literature that states that all cultures, specifically also Western cultures, speaking of European cultures, that they all treated individuals from the spiritual aspect first and then treated the mental, emotional, and then the body perspective. We knew much more back in the day because we only knew about our environment before we knew the micro level aspects of our, you know, our life. I'm specifically speaking to chemistry and constituents of chemistry. We as human beings literally were much more connected to the spiritual aspect and then the mental, emotional, and then the body aspect through rituals, ceremonial rites, and customs, as well as what we have around us, which would mostly were herbs and other things. Again, back to the 1900s, René Descartes really split us in that his philosophy was that we were more like a machine rather than an actual, you know, from our regard, a miracle of life. You know, often we don't think of ourselves as these
these entities that traverse shortly around the world. I mean, for a short time around the world, and then you know we move on. So I know that's sort of more of an esoteric kind of perspective, but so that what they call that a Descartesian split. Alternative folks didn't obviously split, but conventional doctors rode on that wave for a long time, and began to really provide evidence that they were, at a very micro level, that there was these little machines or like molecules working to express who we are. So back to the issue of quackery, I think what it is, the difference between our approaches is that, you have medical doctors that treat only physical disease if you're going to reduce it that way, they mostly treat trauma as well, mechanical trauma, like in accidents or like burns, etc. But they also treat chronic disease and some acute diseases, but again, from a body perspective. Then you have the other split where you see counselors and psychologists and psychiatrists use only the mental emotional aspect. And then you have then the other conventional side, which is, spiritual people, meaning, religious individuals, clerics, clerics, etc., that treating the spiritual aspect. So you have this, like, three different entities trying to address, the population. Where from our side is like, well, we don't think of them all separately. We'll think of them all as an entity. So every individual is composed of the spiritual aspect, the mental emotional aspect, as well as the mind and mental emotional. So all of those together, that's the way we approach it, and we're called quacks for that. And it's interesting that. That's the default when that is the whole human being, and every individual again is very unique in their way of living, their way of expression, the way they express themselves on in their living environment. So maybe perhaps that's part of the what I'm your question or what I'm answering, but maybe perhaps you can lead me on a little bit further into other things.
I think that's you come to a great explanation and understanding of why you're being called quacks as a field, which I think is unfortunate because again, if you're able to take all three of these components, combine them, and understand the whole of the human being, that's therein is the holistic healing, right?
Absolutely,
we hear
yeah.
about holistic healing quite a bit. We don't really understand what that means, but what you just described, that is holistic healing.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be that people in your field are ahead of their time. It could be 100, 200 years from now, we finally have all the literature to back up what your the treatments that you have,
mm-hmm.
The approaches that your field is proposing. But for now, because we have such a medicalized model, and the medicalized model is so attached to the evidence base, it's almost like there's a willful ignorance of anything that's outside of that evidence base, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
But if we could just take all the research from each of these three areas currently, combine them, which hasn't been done yet, to my knowledge, then we will have more support for your area, and perhaps that'll lead fewer people to calling you quacks.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're afraid of that.
Mm-hmm.
That could be the case.
When you were adding this, I was thinking that from a medical standpoint, it's almost hard to understand that you would approach someone only from a body perspective, and you only approach someone only from mental emotional perspective, and then a spiritual. It's hard to believe that, because what happens is that from an economic perspective, you're approaching everybody. You're approaching someone monetarily.
Mm-hmm.
You're not approaching someone from what you said is holistically. You're not. That is in essence. Our medicine is one of sustainability,
mm-hmm.
rather than something that would be, splitting them up to just always money. We know that there's a pharmaceutical industrial complex in some regard, and we know that there's a lot of money, going into our medical system. Unfortunately, where we're having a lot of issues in,
we have a sickness management absolutely. System right now rather than a health enhancement system.
Right, rather than a preventive as well, to add into that. So anyway, it's a really interesting point you make.
Well, fascinating discussion on both of these topics. And now Dr. Cervantes will be talking briefly about what actually happened with those case studies that we learned about last week.
Ivan, though, is a traditional Diné in Navajo. Instead of continuing on with the conventional practice or follow-up and treatment, he decided to seek out a medicine man in the Navajo Indian Reservation. So he and his wife and children went to seek out help from these elders, and they sought out a medicine man there. Basically, he partook of a ceremony that took place for 3 days. He entered at sundown on the first day and did not come out of what they call a hogan until 3 days later, also after sunset. During that time, they performed what they call the calling the spirit back or calling the warrior back ceremony. Of that Indian reservation, and Ivan, returned from that trip, from that medicine man, from that ritual, and little by little regained his old self. So I think the point of this is that there are elements of from different disciplines, specifically natural medicine, where. One really needs to approach a case not solely from a chemical perspective, also in a trauma perspective, so a mental emotional perspective, but also seek out one that treats the spirit. So from that medicine man, what he did was call the spirit back into his life, and therefore Ivan returned to becoming a more sustained individual. He came off of the medications on his own. He no longer sought out intervention from counseling, and began to practice other traditional Navajo ceremonies, which include the sweat lodges, good sun dance, and teepee ceremonies. So that's the case, the first case of Ivan, where he's now a better person, doesn't have any behavioral issues and PTSD symptoms that he would describe previously are no longer with him. So
the second case is of a 29-year-old female who sought out counseling due to being raped when she was 14 through 16 years old. She had a lot of issues with obviously with her parents due to the projection that obviously they didn't protect her at a youthful age. She began using drugs after that, and drugs and alcohol, specifically methamphetamine and heroin. And which is interesting, though, she also began to seek out Native American ceremonies to also help her. During that process, though, one of her elders, as she states, began to tell her that she acquired a specific spirit at a very young age. And what that elder was saying is basically that she began to manifest the spirit that was put onto her from a male, from males, because she was a very aggressive individual, always fought with everybody. So her demeanor was very, I guess we would just describe it from a Chinese perspective as a yang energy, rather than more of a female essence of a yin. So in any event, the reason I'm mentioning this case is because this 29-year-old finally decided to take a further step and do what they call also in Native American ways of spirit ceremony, as a previous case was. So a spirit retrieval ceremony. And that took place And when she had no resolved issues with Western medicine or Western approaches, which would be counseling and other medication, she began to experience after the ceremony a lot of alleviation of her symptoms, specifically the anxiety that the anxiety, a lot of issues with her sleep patterns, and she wouldn't be able to sleep very much. She would have constant nightmares. She was often, she had panic attacks. But little by little, after this ceremony, she began to find relief from that. She's currently seeking also further assistance from a naturopathic doctor, who provides herbs and other types of counseling that are different than approaches from the conventional approaches of counseling. And that's it for that case.